Hello, and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
I'm Clayton Ashley.
That's true. And this week, it is episode 9 of season 1, entitled Civilization, in the week of November 14th, 2001. So, let's take a spin around the world as it was that week, first up. So some big stuff happening. Guess what? This week, baby, the Xbox is released.
How did I not remember that?
It was released the day after this episode came out. The beautiful Xbox.
I mean, I never had one. I'm saying I should have known it because I work at a video game website. But like,
yeah.
I don't even think I knew somebody who had one.
No, I mean, I feel like it was at that point a luxury item. Am I wrong that it was more expensive than the other ones, or did it just feel that way because it was so physically gigantic?
It was both a large box, but also a large price because it came out after, so it was a little...
That was the slogan. It was large box.
Large box. Shit, I should make sure I know it for a fact it came out after, but I'm pretty sure GameCube... No, I'm speaking out of my ass right now. I do not know the exact order those consoles came out.
The GameCube came out September 14th, 2001. That's crazy.
How did we miss that?
Well,
started. Oh my God, it came out.
The show started slightly afterwards.
Were people scared enough to not go out and get their GameCubes?
I feel like I got GameCube that Hanukkah.
Oh, we might have actually gotten it that Christmas because for some reason... We weren't actually a Nintendo household until that time.
Yeah. Oh, God. Sorry. It came out in North America. Clayton, this is spoilers for next week's episode. It came out in North America November 18th, 2001, which would have been like the Monday.
Okay. So we had a console showdown here to distract us.
All right. That's right. And we were a Nintendo family. So I had all the Nintendo consoles. I think I've owned every Nintendo console since the beginning except for the Super Nintendo.
Sick.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a bunch of the Nintendo friends, but we were a PlayStation family until the GameCube.
Yeah, you and your father, Crash Bandicoot, would not let you own an Xbox.
Too violent.
He was walking around your house shirtless, wearing jeans and a big carabiner and a chain from his wallet. Does Crash Bandicoot talk? I imagine he has an Australian accent.
Wow, he just kind of does that.
Okay, does he says why in an Australian accent? I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay, I never played it. So that's that. There was like another terror scare, but just a normal tragedy, which was the crash of American Airlines flight 587, which I remember right outside of JFK, like right after takeoff, crashed, and it killed like 250 people. It's the second deadliest crash in US history. Everybody was like terrified that it was more terrorism.
Because it just crashed into a neighborhood, right?
It crashed into Bell Harbor. Yeah, just like a regular old neighborhood right next to JFK. Just horrifying to think about. It was just, I think, pilot error, which is cool for me to think about as someone who's terrified of flying. There were a couple of things happening. There was that, and then there was the time that it was like 8 or 9 years later, a pitcher on the Yankees flew his plane into someone's house on the Upper East Side.
Wait, what?
By accident. Yeah.
By accident. Okay.
Yeah, you crashed like a Cessna, because that's what you do when you pilot a Cessna, is you crash it.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like on the Upper East Side. Crazy. So Xbox, flight crashing, more serious shit happening. Kabul, Afghanistan is taken back by the U.S.-backed Afghani forces after it is abandoned by the Taliban. So at this point, I believe everyone was kind of like, great. And now the war in Afghanistan, which we all knew was going to be quick. Yeah, we're all dusting our hands off.
Sorry, that doesn't translate on a podcast.
Clayton was doing this sort of, I was almost like, Clayton, there's no way they'll understand what you just did. So to demonstrate, I was going to also do it visually. Just imagine.
That'll get through.
Here's some ASMR of my hands rubbing.
One of these will go through, maybe.
Yeah. If not, you're the engineer for these, so you can get some Foley on there. But we all thought, Afghanistan war wrapping up soon, I'm sure.
Wasn't it also the case? I can't remember exactly when, but that they were like thousands of meters away from getting Osama and like finishing the job right there, and then they like didn't, or is that some like apocryphal?
That was an apocryphal thing. I think that might have been in.
Was it in a movie?
That might have been later.
It was later. Okay.
I mean, I think you were thinking of the Battle of Tora Bora. Is a specific thing that was in. That's later this month in November 2001.
Okay.
Where so Osama bin Laden did get away, I believe. You're the right idea. Like literally, you're like 2 weeks off. But yeah, that does. It sounds apocryphal, but it was real. We were not yet distracted by Iraq. We were distracted by, I don't know, the military not being very good at the war on terror.
So cool.
And then we got a big sound, the 2001 uh-oh siren. George W. Bush signed an executive order allowing military tribunals against foreigners suspected of connections to terrorist acts or planned acts in the United States, which means that if you are suspected of terrorism and you are not a citizen of the country, you just go before a military tribunal now instead of the U.S. justice system, which is already so good. But it's now worse.
I have to assume this is also kind of what got the Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, this is like this is the beginning of the wheel spinning on that, and you know, Patriot Act, etc. All that nonsense. The ACLU is mad, obviously, at this point. But like, this is like the full on like people don't have rights anymore. We're just fully, you know, you get put in front of a military judge and either deported or jailed indefinitely without being charged.
And am I mistaken? But is this like still caught in the gears of the military and just normal federal justice system of like, I feel like there's been like a clown show of people getting appointed to lead it and then getting fired or
getting replaced. I mean, and, probably.
And ultimately sounds, what's happening right. is the people stay in prison, but.
Yeah. I mean, what happens is people go to jail for without being charged and they sit there and they rat there for years, like Guantanamo style. And you just stay there for two decades without being charged. For the crime of generally just being Arab. Anyway, so that's the sort of national sickness news-wise. That's what's happening.
But how's the culture?
But the culture is not much better.
Oh.
Unfortunately. Music, not much has changed. Mary J. Blige's Family Affair, J-Lo's Amriel, and Enrique Iglesias' Hero still keep their stranglehold on the American psyche. Stains, It's Been a While, and Nickelback's How You Remind Me still hanging around. I scrolled all the way to the bottom of the Billboard Hot 100. I did not see anything evil looming.
Well, how high has Nickelback risen? Is it on the top 10?
Nickelback is at this. Sorry, let me just double check.
I'm pretty sure it was just at the outset. It was at 11.
Yeah, Nickelback is at number 9.
All right.
Welcome to the top 10, Nickelback. It's Been a While from Stained. Peaked at number 5, but is down to number 9. But yeah, everyone's just listening to the same. Fallen is, of course, still Fallen. Down to number 4. Nelly Furtado's Turn Off the Light also hanging around. So that's music. For movies, I'm seeing something here called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Debuts to $129 million, which is a lot of money for a movie I've never heard of.
Some Columbo did it, right?
Yeah, Columbo did it. Columbus. I believe Columbo directed it. It was
Christopher
Columbus directed it. based on the hit novel for children by, I'm seeing here in my notes, some woman I'm not allowed to talk about for fear of legal reprisal. Joanne, I know you're listening. And I know you hate me, and I hate you too. Yeah, a movie that you've seen. This movie, it sucks ass.
It's so they got the notably bland director.
Yeah, they got the blandest director of all time.
Can you go and make this the most bland?
Yeah, I mean, it's like basically like, hey, we're going to the money printing factory. Can you make sure that can you get us there in a Toyota Corolla, like? That's what, and Chris Columbus is that Corolla. Like, that's why, right? Like,
yeah, just, that's like, a very good analogy.
Like, we cannot fuck this up. Like, if we fuck this up, we're the stupidest people. Like, we need to make at least 7 movies out of this.
And it's a thing that relies on its props being good, kind of more than a lot of
yeah,
real good story pacing or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, it sucks. It, like, the CGI looks so bad. Remember there's like a troll in it and it looks so bad?
Fuck, I forgot it. I think I'm focusing on the
dog,
like,
shit movie.
They got a hat that talks.
They got a hat that talks.
A big guy with a beard.
They got a troll that walks. They got fucking, yeah, they got a Hagrid that they use trick photography to make him look big, which I think is cool, at least. We did him up Lord of the Rings style. but a movie that looks like shit and is dog shit and is by a shitty person and expresses a shitty politic.
Bingo.
And yeah, and the movies, the second one, also really bad. Those movies are bad, except for the one that Alfonso Cuarón did for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it turns out you get a good director in there who gets a little bit more free reign. I remember that one because it was the first one that they put a lot of the cast in, like, normal clothes.
They did.
So they could focus a bit more on, like, what they're talking about as opposed to, like, how good a hat is that?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. If a hat could talk to me, I'd wear that hat. It's pretty cool.
Fair.
Also new this week is Tony Scott's Spy Game with Robert Redford and Brad Pitt, which I've never seen, but sounds like some shit I would go nuts for right
now.
Sorry,
wait. Brad Pitt and who?
Robert Redford.
What? We got two Robert Redfords?
Yeah.
In the same fall, they were.
Yeah, we were eaten. I get the feeling that this movie Spy Game might have gotten pushed back. I don't know. I feel like there's some. I don't know. It's called Spy Game, dude.
Sure.
It's about spies. The synopsis officially is: retiring CIA agent Nathan Meir recalls his training of Tom Bishop while working against agency politics to free him from his Chinese captors. So, you know, not like a scary movie to have out during 9/11, but I think there's a lot of like the movies. What, like, there was a couple of weeks there where every movie coming out was like, oh, people were not going out again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We are afraid.
Well, I'm even just thinking about the other Robert Redford movie, The Last Castle, which I guess I'm mentioning again, was right. Notably not like a great depiction of U.S. soldiers or the military justice system. In fact,
no.
Which was probably partially why it didn't do so well. But maybe this one had a better shot.
Yeah. Also new this week, a Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg movie called The Wash, where they work at a car wash. A movie I fully don't remember even coming out.
I'm guessing a comedy? Or was it?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I couldn't.
Hanging out?
I think it's a hangout movie. Yeah, Life at the Car Wash is a place in Los Angeles, California, where anything can and does happen to two friends, Sean and D-Lok, trying to earn money to pay their rent. It's a comedy. You know, it only cost $7 million to make, and it made 10. Great job, everybody.
Great job.
I
cannot not think about the transformation that Snoop Dogg specifically has made.
Yeah. In culture, you mean?
Well, yeah, being like a ambassador for the Olympics this year, being in like an incessant T-Mobile commercial, and being pals with Martha Stewart.
That's right. Which, according to the new documentary, it seems to be they are genuine pals.
Everything I'd read about them, I was like, I really think their little interviews on late night and whatnot, that these two are genuinely good friends. And it's funny, partially, not to get into a Martha Stewart tangent here, but why not? She lost a lot of friends after going to prison.
I'm sure she did.
And Snoop Dogg was someone who didn't judge her.
Yeah. And here's the thing, is they have a lot to talk about, and it's called Class Solidarity. My friend, they have a lot in common, actually, because they're both rich. What else? Oh, also new this week is Martin Lawrence's Black Knight, which is basically a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, but updated.
Oh, that,
you know, like,
wow.
He's a guy that works at like a Renaissance fair, like a medieval theme park, and goes back in time.
This pierced the culture enough that I definitely remember this.
Yeah, I saw Black Knight. It was fine. And then there's a very dumb Disney movie called Out Cold about snowboarding teens, which these days would be straight to streaming. But those days they at least put it in movie theaters for a couple of weeks.
I'm gonna just real quick Disney
Out Cold
snowboarding movies. I'm just curious how many.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
How many? At least three came up immediately. Cloud Nine, Johnny Tsunami, and Back
Johnny
on Board.
Johnny Tsunami. What's funny is I don't even see Out Cold here.
I know. It didn't come up.
Is it not Disney? Am I out of my mind? Wow. Well, you know, I said Disney because it is not Disney. That's why it didn't show up.
Fair to make that.
You know, okay,
though.
It was a Touchstone picture, which is Disney owned. So.
Okay, tangentially. Okay. It'd be on Disney Plus, if anywhere.
Yeah. It was, that's right. This was, I believe, the film premiere of Zach Galifianakis. I'm almost positive. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he's in it. I don't know if it's his first movie, but it's a very early appearance of Zach Galifianakis. And of course, Willie Garçon, Stanford from Sex and the City, is in this movie.
Wild.
I don't know why I remember that, but I do. Thomas Lennon in this movie? Wow. Okay. So last bit here is TV. Still the same the mainstays as normal. ER, Friends, West Wing, Survivor. But also in there, a huge share that week is the I Love Lucy 50th anniversary retrospective. And ABC airing Saving Private Ryan, which is just sort of like some jingling keys on the television for everybody to watch. I also found the listings of, I found like the TV listings for like the networks the night Enterprise aired and the ratings for everything.
Oh, yeah.
So on network TV that night, our friend Enterprise is getting crushed by Ed, My Wife and Kids. An hour block on Fox that is Malcolm in the Middle and the Bernie Mac Show.
Well, fair.
And of course, 2001 fall mainstay, 60 Minutes 2. Sequel to 60 Minutes. They could have called it 61 Minutes. That's what I would have called it. The 61st minute.
Another 60 minutes.
60 more minutes. They should have had us in the room to
bounce ideas
to pitch some better ideas.
Yeah.
But that's the week in America where we are losing our civil liberties, chasing the dragon of terror. We are watching Martin Lawrence's Black Knight with our friends at the movie theater, or Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, getting our brains rotted by one of the worst and stupidest fucking commercial properties of the last 100 years. and then we're watching the I Love Lucy 50th anniversary special while we drift off to the sounds of some talking head talking about how important it was that, I don't know, that they slept in different beds or what, I don't know, fucking whatever. We're just falling asleep, thinking to ourselves, wasn't life so simple then in the 1950s? Isn't America so wonderful? Isn't it great to be an American?
Yeah, that nostalgia thing, which of course I was not aware of at all. But the like 1-2 punch of like I Love Lucy and also World War II.
Yeah.
Like, of course, that's what networks were going for. Running.
I mean, it was also, also I think, you know, Saving Private Ryan, there was a lot of World War II nostalgia. There always has been. There always probably will be. But I think at the time people were going really hard on it, especially with Saving Private Ryan and movies like that. That were sort of like, and here it is, everybody, the good war. Right. And we're doing it again. Like a war that is justified, a war that is good, a war that is moral to fight. It is okay to kill teenagers, you know, from other countries, or, you know, just fucking kill as many civilians as you possibly can. Firebomb them, drop an atomic bomb, whatever you need to do, because the cause is just. And the cause, of course, is rescuing all the people we would not let into the country 10 years earlier. So, you know, like, it's just sort of like more fucking rot at the heart of the American project that has always been here. And I'm mad this week. Could you tell? Can you tell that I'm mad?
Yeah.
I've always been mad, but I'm extra mad.
you'll see in just a sec that there's an interesting connection to this week's episode with this week's recording. But everything you just said, there was something I was thinking about, but my mind is a jumble.
It's fine. We're recording this on November the 13th. My brain is scrambled eggs. It's all scrambled up because I'm just so excited. The future is so bright that I gotta wear shades. Clayton, what happened What happened on Enterprise this week?
Not a whole lot. So much could have happened, but boy, was it a real shitter. So this is episode 9, Civilization. Temp name? I don't know. It starts with a morning stand-up meeting. They finally found a Minshara class planet with a civilization on it. Get it? And that's it. That's the intro. We found a civilization. It's like a placeholder in the script. Like,
yeah. Also, I love their, like, we found a civilization. We can tell everything about it from this far away, despite it being like the 1960s or whatever for space travel, where they're just like, oh yeah, it's got exactly 500 million people on it. And it's,
yeah, right.
We can just tell.
So that's when they come back from the musical intro. They are studying them with their super cameras and very quickly determine their tech level is they have sailing ships. They still need like 10 more pallets of iron to reach the industrial age. But
yeah, they've not constructed enough pylons
exactly
as a society to enable mass communication yet.
I played Civilization. I know exactly what they need to research. They're
I never
close.
Played Civ. I played StarCraft, as I you can tell, and Warcraft.
But it's after this part where they sort of like spy on them with crystal clear telescopes to determine that they look almost like humans.
Yeah, with the most minimal ridges imaginable.
Yeah,
it looks like someone got hit. They got hit in the head with both sides of their head with a boomerang.
Yeah, just sort of. Exactly. Yeah, it's funny to me that like they do call it civilization, but there's not much civilization stuff about this episode. It turns out to be interested in a whole other thing. But, T'Pol also does try to chime in here and be like, hey, as Vulcans, don't think you should talk to an alien unless they've researched warp.
Yeah.
So maybe let's not. And they're all like, fuck off. Sorry, Archer said it a lot nicer. He's like, we could have sent a probe to take photos, scan them, but we sent us here, so we're going to go talk to them. Or look at them, whatever.
Crucially, at the stand-up meeting. They're like, they like slow roll it. They're like, oh, there's like a weird like anomaly. There's like a sun or whatever. And then Tucker looks at Archer and is like, and there's a Minshara class planet. And I got so mad thinking about, because in all other Star Trek stuff, class M means like inhabitable, right? Mm-hmm. It means like breathable air, good gravity, water, right? Suitable for agriculture or whatever, like Earth-like, class M. So, and I'm like, does it just mean fucking Minshara? So I'm like, I'm on the memory alpha, zipping around, looking for fucking this thing. And she's like, yeah, it's from the word Minshara, which was established on Star Trek Enterprise. No one knows what Minshara means. It's a Vulcan word that means inhabitable. And it's like, what's the point of doing the dumb prequel thing where you over-explain everything, but you don't really explain it? Like, what are we, you could have, why not? Like, clearly we are, this is the part of the show that begins circling the idea of the Prime Directive, right?
Exactly,
like they're like,
Really,
T'Pol is like, we don't do this stuff, and it's just sort of like taboo to fuck it up too much, right?
Yeah.
But like, so we're clearly getting into this, but why not give Class M an interesting fucking origin story? If you're gonna do the thing where you're like, it's a very old Patton Oswalt bit where he's like, talk about the Star Wars prequels being like, you like ice cream? Well, here's a big bucket of milk and some rock salt. Like, like if we're going to over explain everything, show me the milk, man. I don't know. It just seems dumb to like start doing that and then just be like, oh, it means this word. Never mind. Goodbye. And just doodle off screen.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly the thing, because there's inhabitable, but exactly as you see here, well, is it also inhabited? And there could have been a cool distinction there, but instead what we get is a thing that's focused on kind of trying to do some of the prequel stuff that they think is good, which is like, you know how they have to put makeup on to blend in? This is the first time.
Yeah.
Who cares?
And who puts on the make? Who's the makeup expert? The doctor.
Yeah. It's just like they give Hoshi ridges because they need their translator to go there.
Yeah.
So they have Phlox put the makeup on. It's like a fine little scene. He doesn't even get much to do, but it's just I just read to confirm this and like, yes, this is in canon the first time they ever did this disguising method. And it's like,
yeah,
I wish it could have mattered.
I wish.
Yeah.
If only.
And it's also funny here because T'Pol says, like, you're going to be obvious. And Archer's just like, no, we won't.
we'll be fine. Nothing will go wrong. Oh, Hoshi has also translated their entire language from space.
Oh, yeah. She's really excited
in
to listen.
4 minutes. Like, she's like, yeah. She's like, oh, here's the name of the race. I listened to it on my Walkman for 4 seconds and I got it.
It's the Akali.
The Akali.
Fun fact, they come back in Discovery.
Do they?
Yeah, apparently.
I've blacked that entire show out of my fucking
totally
memory
fair.
Because of how bad it is.
The thing that's funny to me about like the idea that you're going to be obvious, and they don't even make any attempt to get into this in the episode.
Why would they?
But okay, sure, you got the language, you even got costumes, but you don't know mannerisms, you don't know any kind of cultural, like how to act. Like, how weird is it to break in? Like, maybe you get the death penalty for breaking in or something. Like,
yeah.
You have no idea what the consequences of any action you take almost. But, you know, it's Star Trek, so of course it's fine. They basically, it's a Ren Faire when they get down there.
Yeah.
Hoshi is getting the makeup. It seems like just Archer and Hoshi are going to go down until they detect antimatter on the surface.
Yeah.
So something here is way advanced tech level, probably another alien. So now suddenly...
Yeah, it's Archer, Tucker, T'Pol, and Hoshi.
Because he says we need 2 more costumes. Actually, he said, let the quartermaster know we'll need 3 more sets of clothing. And I got a little stuck on this line because who's the quartermaster? And also, what a cool job. I'm just imagining this quartermaster is just like, I've been looking so forward to this. This is my day to shine. I guess they don't have full matter converters to just make costumes yet because they do have to ask the quartermaster to do it. I'm just really focused on this.
There's one guy with a sewing machine in the bowels of the ship.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's not in charge of the makeup, by the way. Again,
no,
that is
no,
the
no,
doctor.
No. Just
the doctor's in charge of that, which makes a lot of sense. I love the Ren Faire aspect down there. I do love it. Does a thing. I was watching this episode. I straight up don't remember it from my previous watch of this show. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, this looks like some classic original series chicanery that we're about to get up to.
Yeah.
Is what it felt like when you see the planet. You're like, oh yeah, this is like an original series planet. I love this, actually.
Yeah, that first shot on the surface, I had to admit, like, that is more extras than we've seen on set, especially in costumes, than I feel like we've seen in the last 6 episodes combined.
Yeah.
Like, it is,
they
frankly,
wasted the extras budget on this one episode for the whole season.
Exactly, yeah, of all episodes. But like, you know... credits were credits too. That was like, oh, I was a little excited. Like, this could be maybe a mad caper of some sort. Instead, they go the direction of Archer and Trip deciding to break into the store where they detected the antimatter. And it's full of mysterious trinkets, which turns out to be they raided the prop storeroom to fill up this trinket room, which I was like, yeah, that was also a pretty good set as far as like how much physical shit was in it.
Yeah, it was dressed.
It was dressed well, and it's like, oh, okay, they just reused a lot of stuff.
I actually like that. That's good.
Yeah, that's fun. But it turns out somebody's been watching them, and they've got a little tiny crossbow, and they're just about, they turn it on them and are like, who are you? Why are you here? There's people getting sick. I have to know. And then T'Pol saves Archer and Trip.
Yeah.
By stunning the mysterious person, it is Rion. Who she wakes up in the soft exposure attic with Archer.
Oh my, yeah. It's like you see this one shot of her and you're like, I'm just gonna like set the over under on the timestamp of the episode when Archer and her kiss. I just like know, like they've given her the smooch lighting. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I saw somebody call this a very Riker-esque episode and it's like, okay, I guess that makes sense in that sense.
It's a Kirk episode. It's like they're giving Archer Kirk stuff to do in this episode, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it's Rikery in that Archer seems horny and he solves a problem by kissing a woman. But that's also
exactly.
A Kirk thing. I think that's because Riker's got some Kirk in him.
Fair enough. That's where they put the Kirk.
That's where they put the Kirk on that show because it was not in fucking...
Oh, no.
What's his dick? Jean-Luc.
Jean-Luc the
That
Andrew.
Pussy. Yeah. Too erudite. He was too erudite and he turned off our friend Lawrence Kansas.
Yeah, they could. They had and of course they're not going to listen to the or watch the series with the black guy or the woman. So
God no.
Yeah. But they had this episode, he basically says, like, I'm the medieval FBI agent. Like, you know, I'm investigating. I don't know why she bought that, but
this stuck in my craw so bad. He goes, I'm investigating. I'm here from another city. And she goes, where, which city? And he goes, I cannot tell you. Could you imagine if someone said to you, I'm here from another place? Make up the name of a place, Dan.
Yeah.
Come on. Dan? That's not his name. John. He also sells her his name is John, which is like, you've listened to their language so much that you learned it in a day. Can you? And also, I guess the translators are working so fucking incredibly.
You know, I didn't think about that when he gave his name, but I did note that when T'Pol, he's just like, this is my friend T'Pol. And I'm like, why didn't you give her a name? I guess none of them got names.
None of them got names. Hi, I'm John.
I'm John.
From another town.
From another town. So she explains that she's suspicious of Garros, the store owner, and the diseases that he's spreading.
That's right.
And she doesn't know, I'm not sure, maybe it's later, but she explains that, like, she knows there's a disease going on. It's bad, but she's not
sure.
You
see people with, like, lesions and stuff.
Yeah, and it doesn't know what's causing it, and it hits, like, anybody. But the only thing that seems to be a pattern is that it's all around Garros's shop. So it's something connected, it seems. So we get Malcolm, a quick scene with Malcolm saying that the building, it's got plot armor against the Enterprise, so he can't do shit.
That's right.
I guess it is somewhat helpful to remind the audience that they do have a futuristic spaceship. For this specific problem, it's got those good cameras that can see people's faces. Can it do anything about this store? Nah.
No, absolutely not. Nope. It's a magic store.
So the away team has a huddle and decides, let's just talk to the guy.
Yeah.
And they go in. And I also forgot this episode. For a second, I thought it was the one where Archer makes a really ham-fisted analogy to the Prime Directive, but that's not yet. They're going to kind of do this whole episode again.
Way later, yeah.
But I thought they were going to, like, maybe try to do some subterfuge here, get some information out of him by pretending who they were. But, yeah, after some really, really, really a bad attempt that Trip makes to kind of talk to him, Archer just goes, you're an alien because I got a DNA detector. Who whips out his own and goes, you're also aliens.
I've also detected your DNA. Yeah. This guy, by the way, the alien, is the mean correctional officer from similarly cursed mid-2000s show Prison Break. A show I watched all of for some reason in college.
Yeah, I feel like you've mentioned this on the podcast before.
Yeah, I don't know why I watched Prison Break, but this guy was on Prison Break. He was a scary guy in that show too. Anyways, he's not around anymore too much.
More to do here. I have no idea if he's a good or bad actor.
He's fine. He's got like a very distinct face and voice on Prison Break, I feel like. But they don't get much to do here. And yeah, you were saying like they don't, this is like when the episode completely bails on the idea of any like civilizationally interesting thing happening. Mm-hmm, and the show goes, and the episode goes from an episode that was called Civilization to an episode that should have been called One Annoying Guy. because like the rest of the episode is just them being like, this guy's fucking annoying. What do we do about it?
I know he's doing something in there. I just know it. We got it. Okay. So he reveals that he's from the Malurian system and says his generator is just for making food and clothing. Yeah. You know, that's why you need an antimatter generator.
His ship broke down or whatever. He too was an explorer or something is what he says.
We get another fun callback here, though. This guy is from the Malurian system. Do you know who the Malurians were?
No, I don't.
They're a somewhat important plot point, but never shown on the original series, if that helps.
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
Okay, so do you remember Nomad, the like probe they find, and it like hovers around in the Enterprise?
Yes.
In the beginning, they're trying to find Nomad because it's like genocided an entire planet. That's the Malurians.
Oh my god. Well, I'm finding out now they deserved it because this guy's annoying.
Really kind of fucked up, but that's their little callback here.
That's so funny.
He also explains that the sickness is totally native and not his fault. He's just getting blamed for it. But Archer and Trip are not buying it. So this is where Archer talks to Rian and T'Pol and brings along T'Pol. And this is, yeah, where Nota just doesn't give her a fake name. And T'Pol's there to do some like sneaky analysis.
Yeah.
Waving her little science device around and I think taking photos and stuff. And she goes back goes to Enterprise to take all the data she's gathered and kind of talk over it with Phlox, who discovers an industrial chemical in the water supply. Now, I said that this episode had an interesting connection to this week. This scene was shot on September 11th.
No.
It was the first scene they shot for this episode. The whole episode was shot that week.
Oh my God.
This scene might have been interrupted by someone saying what happened. And that is what these actors have to say is where they were.
On 9/11, I was filming one of the worst episodes of television I've ever seen. That's...
in alien makeup.
Wild.
So the writer, Mike Sussman, says that he cannot watch this episode because you can see the light extinguished from everyone's eyes.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's like... wow, that's wild. It's this and the Turtle Club scene from The Master of Disguise.
I feel like, okay.
It's an important piece of lore that people do know about.
If we make a sequel to this podcast, it is just finding and tracking down the episode or movies that were shot on 9/11.
Were shot on 9/11 and they were interrupted for...
Dear Lord.
We have to watch the entire MLB season. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
It doesn't surprise me. Of all episodes.
Yeah.
There is a certain listlessness to it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's everyone is kind of sleepwalking through the episode. That fully explains it to me.
I'm kind of surprised, but I guess it is such a like tight schedule that and they're shooting in LA, so it's not like I'm thinking like, oh, everything had to be more shut down on the East Coast.
I mean, Clayton, I feel like you and I could have made this episode in a single day. I feel like they just kind of kept the camera rolling.
So anyway, Archer is staking out the shop to look out for Crate Guy with Rion. And his translator stops working, and you hinted at this. He decides to solve the problem by kissing her or making out with her.
Yeah, he really kind of jumps her. And it's like, man, you're lucky that people kiss on this planet.
Yeah, that's okay. That's the first thing. It's like step one. Is kissing like a good thing?
Or is kissing just like people might just kiss, you know?
All the time.
But like all for like regular reasons. But also like what if the way to be intimate is like you rub your assholes together?
Exactly.
Or you dock your penises. Or something. You know, like maybe, or something.
Yeah, yeah. The and that's, you know, going into like, is it a good thing or a bad gesture? It could have just been like a nothing gesture, and then it's just been like, what the fuck are you doing?
Like, hey, no one's ever done that before on this planet. You're the first person to do that. We actually on this planet poop out of our mouths, and you've just put where the poop comes out of your body onto where the poop comes out of my body because I'm an alien.
We don't even do that for sexual reasons.
Yeah, yeah. This is like, it's just not, it's completely numb.
Oh shit. We missed the crate guy. Like what the.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, he gets it to start working and she's into it. So, you know, whatever, we can move on with that. Crate guy arrives. I noted this because the music suddenly gets very intense from what otherwise has been an extremely boring episode. And it sounded like they were trying really hard.
Yeah,
to get the audience to care.
Yeah, it's to manufacture some tension.
There's some crates. Oh my God, we're gonna follow them into the forest, and then I know it's just aliens in the woods, but suddenly this did give me a very X-Files-y vibe because a UFO, basically a spaceship, comes in and takes the crates away.
Yeah.
Dun dun dun. So they get shot at though by the crate guy who was actually hanging around, and they have a fight that's in the dark, so even if it was like any good, which I don't think it was, it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. I will say during the fight that Archer has with the guy, there's one very brief decent little makeup effect where his mask peels back and you see his real eyeball.
Uh-huh. He's sort of knocked out. Archer starts to peel his face away and you see the like lizard skin underneath, and then his eye opens. And like, that was a good little jump scare, a cool makeup thing. Like,
yeah, I was like, where's more of that? Like that felt very like X-Files-y to me too.
Yeah.
Like seeing that, like there's the way it was shot. I don't know. It was reminiscent to me.
And then Archer stuns him, but They use the guy's key card to sneak down to the generator, which I will note this now. That prop specifically, the generator, is from Voyager. Don't know if you remember it for some reason, but...
I don't. I do remember also the guy who plays Garros was also on Voyager. I also remember him from there.
Fun.
From an episode where everyone is in a nebula with their skin falling off, if I recall correctly.
That sounds so much more interesting than this episode. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. But every episode of Star Trek he's in, people have problems with their skin, which is an interesting through line.
Interesting connection.
Mm-hmm.
They discover that below even the generator is a big mine with a bunch of people out down there, and it's causing the chemical leakage. They know for sure because of their scan, whatever. Rion, and I think, starts pointing at a computer screen that I just noted look very much like the prop department got pretty lazy and just stuck like a Dell monitor on top of something.
Yeah.
But anyway, they have to like figure out whether to press blue or yellow. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah. I kind of got a little lost here, and Archer's just looking at this lady like blue or yellow. And she's like, I don't know. He's like, choose one. And I'm like, this is fine.
It's
they
a little
press
bit
blue.
Okay. I'm playing this game that this reminds me of a little bit, and that it's like, there's a clue. It's the blue light is on. So maybe that means this will turn it off. And it turns out it's the like, lock down and turn on the alarms button.
Yeah, it's the very loud noise button is what it is.
The Enterprise also gets attacked by Garrus' ship, and Garrus calls and says, "You guys better get out of here. I already killed Archer."
Yeah,
he does. I mean, he does a pretty good job. He is better at intimidating than he was at like Gormless shopkeeper,
for sure.
But Garrus also talks through a window to the trapped Rion and Archer and tries to make a deal. And then we quickly cut back to a scene where T'Pol is in command, but Trip keeps like second guessing her. And like, I just note this because once again, the whole scene seems to be like, you're an asshole, Trip, just trust T'Pol. Like,
yeah.
Just have another one of those scenes in here. Just, I guess it's the theme this season. But Archer, this is where I got a little lost. I just wrote down Archer does something and they're able to escape and they just kind of walk out. It's just, it's fine, whatever. But they do use the set they built with a good number of extras to have a laser fight in the streets.
Yes.
I wish it was more interesting, but they did that. They had some laser fight.
I do like a laser fight. It was not a good one. It wasn't well shot or anything.
Nothing very interesting happens. It ends in a little bit here. Very, anticlimactically, but first we have to get T'Pol and Trip working together.
Yeah.
So now they can teleport the antimatter generator in front of the enemy ship and then blow it up because nothing else they have on Enterprise is powerful enough to destroy its shields.
Whatever.
And they do, they execute that plan. It happens. And then it does that thing. There's nothing interesting about it again.
Yeah.
Archer, to end the fight on the ground, he also blows something up, but he blows up an oil lamp with Rion's help because she knows that fact, that the lamps are full of oil.
That's right.
Great.
Fine.
God, nothing else really happens. Archer gives Rion some medicine. The Vulcans are like, they'll watch out for Garrus. And then it ends on another makeout session.
That's correct. Wonderful.
That's it.
Man, what a stinker of an episode.
Potentially the worst episode of this season, I think. So
I don't know, the one with the people running around in the mud.
That was in a lot of ways had some elements that were funny to me, how bad they were, like the bizarre music interlude and just how stupid
the
they
weird
were
turtles
being
and stuff. Yeah,
this has nothing endearing about it, nothing funny about it, like nothing to other than this the somewhat now obvious 9/11 connection.
Yeah. Also in War on Terror news, before this episode aired. Apparently, there was a PSA with Scott Bakula, welcoming the USS Enterprise, which is an aircraft carrier that was pulling back into Norfolk. So they're just like shaking hands, Star Trek Enterprise, War on Terror, let's go. Cause that ship was deployed to Iraq at some point.
I guess for anybody, I feel like we'd even mention the top of this, but we're talking about this show in connection with like 9/11 and the culture created. And the history, I mean, it made, but also this show is going to make a hard pivot into that.
Yeah.
But what's interesting now, knowing that this is the episode literally filmed that week, and now every episode that takes place after it will be literally in the shadow of 9/11 now.
Yeah, that's good to know because, you know, you think now, I think, most dramas, I feel like, don't get aired until they're done.
Yeah, because a lot of them are streaming. Because
they're streaming and they're, or there's like so much CGI that they got to do or whatever.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Or I feel like most shows wrap filming significantly before they are aired.
Yeah, but this is like a month and a half.
But the lead time on these shows back when seasons had like 20 something episodes, they tended to just go along contemporaneously. So moving forward, every episode, even if it wasn't written before 9/11,
mm-hmm.
they were filming it afterwards. So that, and the writers are generally on set making tweaks. An interesting thing to keep an eye on, right, as we mm-hmm. move forward, like you said, that these people are fully aware of the national mood.
Yeah, now they're in it.
Now they are finally turtly enough for the Turtle Club, mentally.
Well, that has been another episode of Temporal Culture War.
That's right, baby. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Bye.